It's been a year since Hurricane Maria devastated Puerto Rico. Some of those who evacuated now call Tampa Bay home. This is Florida Matters. From WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sussingham. A year ago this week, Hurricane Maria made landfall in Puerto Rico. Recovery continues on the island, but transitions are also happening here in Florida, a refuge for many island residents and where some have opted to stay. WUSF reporter Roberto Roldan has been covering this story and recently sat down with two families to talk about the past year. Today on Florida Matters, we'll hear a few of those stories. 35-year-old Leslie Diaz is from Carolina, Puerto Rico. She came to Tampa last November by herself with her three young children and her niece while her husband secured their home on the island. She shares her story through translator Andrea Perez.
Yo vivía en urbanización Savannah Gardens hace cinco años.
I used to live in a neighborhood called Savannah Gardens. I have baked cakes all my life, and I used to bake cakes and work at a baking shop. I used to live there with my husband and the two children that are my niece and my husband's son. For fun, we liked to go out and, you know, be with the kids whenever they rode bikes and take them to the movie theaters, just be together with my cousins and the kids. At first, they were telling all of us to stay calm because usually what happens is that a hurricane might come to the island, but then it changes trajectory. So after we realized that it was coming, we were very nervous, especially for the children. And because of how the children were feeling, it would make us feel even more nervous. We understood that this hurricane was what it was. Around 5 a.m., we began hearing the winds howling outside, and we would sneak through the windows and notice the debris flying off from other houses. Our house was really comfortable. It had three rooms. It had the family room, you know, a big kitchen. There was a lot of water in the house, especially the room where we had the kids. The room that I thought would not flood did. It was the room that flooded the most. We actually had the most important documents, personal documents, birth certificates, social security cards, and all of that. There was water everywhere in the house. After the hurricane, it was terrible. There were so many lines to wait for anything that we wanted to buy, and the gas station. It was a desperate situation. November 30th, that was the day that I came here to Tampa. We firstly came to my mother's house, and after we were approved to go and move into a hotel based on one of FEMA's approaches to help us, I came to the hotel first alone with the children. I was alone with four children, and it was a funny situation, actually, because they thought it was a vacation because we were at a hotel. My husband stayed for a few more weeks because he had to deal with things that had happened to the house. And it was difficult for me to find someone to take care of them while I began working. The process for moving from the hotel was a little bit difficult, but when it happened, the kids were so happy. However, they were sort of sad because they weren't going to have pool days anymore at the hotel. But it was difficult for me in terms of applying. They would give me applications, and then I would find out that there were so many others that I had to pay for the application and wait and wait. But when I told the family that we finally were going to have a house for ourselves, they were very happy. The first job that I started here was cleaning, in a cleaning service at night. And then after that, I went to work at a school cafeteria for a while. I'm now baking cakes, and now I'm doing telemarketing work. I do miss Puerto Rico and Carolina, and also the food. But my children are way better here than they were in Puerto Rico. There are a lot of feelings when I think about my transition with the family here. I feel sadness. However, I am very proud of myself because I came here by myself with them and I juggled these four jobs. So in a way, it just makes me feel proud that I was able to do all of it. In a year, I hope to have and open my own bakery. So that's my mission for now.
Esa es mi meta por ahora.
Next, we'll hear from Julio Ildefonso, who traveled to Tampa from Toabaja, Puerto Rico, shortly after the hurricane. He came here with his 66-year-old mother, Mariana Vasquez, who suffers from dementia.
My name is Julio Ildefonso. I come from Puerto Rico, and my place of origin is Toabaja, where the eye of the hurricane went through. Before the hurricane, we used to go over to our neighbors, help them out. We had a lot of handicapped people in our section. Well, we would get together, we would play dominoes, we would cook. We were a big family there. After the hurricane, life was different. Life was very different. I watched as all my neighbors' houses were destroyed. I had them recorded. I didn't record my house getting destroyed because I was taking care of my neighbors' houses. But when we looked to our property, we didn't have no property. We didn't have no house. Everything had flied away. Our roof was three blocks down on top of another family's house, and it wasn't easy. We live in a mountain. The food and everything was coming to the bottom side of the hill. It wasn't going up to the hills. So what we started doing was, I used to wake up at 2 in the morning, go make a line of 6 hours just to get 2 bags of ice, one for me and one for me to give my neighbors, which were elderly people that couldn't go out. They don't drive or anything. I found an officer, which I stopped them, and I told him, look, we have handicapped people up here on this hill that cannot go down the hill to get a box of water or get any food or anything like that. First, they didn't do anything about it, but then he came up with a truck, with military personnel, and we started giving these elderly people food so they could survive. Our street divides into 4 more streets, but those streets go further into the woods. They didn't have in their schedule to go visit these families. When they got up there and I started showing them this way, that way, and they like, oh my God, that's over 100 people here. And we haven't even fed these people for 2 weeks already. They said that only 64 people died on that hurricane. That is the biggest lie they have ever said. 3 days after that hurricane, my brother was working as a security guard. He got killed. We still don't know how did he get killed, because we had to come over here so I could get some help from my mom, because I could sleep anywhere, but my mother cannot sleep anywhere. I came down here to Tampa. I had to go rent a house quick. I seen this house. I asked the owner if he could rent it to me. Yeah, he said, yeah. I got the income and everything. $1,300, $200 of light, $150 of water. It comes up almost to $2,000. It's not easy for us coming from a hurricane to invert that kind of money. I didn't have no peace of mind because I would have always been thinking about next month, how I'm going to pay next month, how I'm going to pay the light, how I'm going to pay the water, get food here. Thanks God that they gave us food stamps. But still, you got to try and survive any which way. I did it for 7 months, but I couldn't no more. I didn't even think that I would have a place to live until I came here to Catholic Charities. They took me in. When I reached out to Catholic Charities, I was real down. I was crying. I didn't know what to do with myself because I felt that, like, I was failing my mother. The help was they put us in a hotel. I was very appreciated because I didn't have where to bring my mom to. I had a place to live for a whole month. They gave me that feeling of secureness. You know, everything's going to work out. Everybody helped me from this place. Now I got a duplex. I got a two-bedroom. I got one bedroom for my mother, one bedroom for me. I got a back patio and a front patio. I feel in my house. Now I could see it in my mom's physical stage and in my physical stage. Before, I never had a smile in my face. I always had something to wonder about. Everything was next month. What I'm going to do next month? How I'm going to help my mom next month? And right now, everything is coming into place. I was one of the blessed that I could leave and take care of my mom over here. I wanted to bring them on, but I couldn't. I couldn't. I'm only one person. The reality in Puerto Rico is that we still have houses that do not have a ceiling, that are not livable, there's still no light, that there's still no water, there's still no communication. Everything in the news is saying Puerto Rico is fine. No, it's not. Puerto Rico is not fine. Yes, they are fixing it. Of course they're fixing Puerto Rico. They're fixing San Juan, tourism. They're fixing Mayagüez, tourism. They're fixing Ponce, tourism. But what about Toa Baja? What about Manatí? What about Vega Baja? What about these other little towns that do not have the tourism in there? But hey, there's people living there. You understand? It probably won't bring up the economic in Puerto Rico, but you still have family that lives there. You know, y'all got to be paying attention to those people, the ones that don't have anything.
The stories that Julio and Leslie just shared will be performed in an upcoming festival called Story Days in Tampa Bay. They'll be shared in a free performance on October 2nd in St. Petersburg. See our story on WUSFnews.org for details about the performance and links to the festival schedule. Next, Melissa Brass is a case manager for Catholic Charities of the Diocese of St. Petersburg. Melissa, welcome to Florida Matters.
Thank you for having me.
So you've been helping the people that were displaced by Hurricane Maria that we've been hearing from on this show. How do they find you, or how do you find them?
The first time we did the program, which was in October, it was kind of started through word of mouth. And we had some people that were referred to us because they were aware that we were doing disaster services for Irma. And then basically all the agencies in the area that were helping with the Hurricane Maria evacuees, they started becoming a good referral source for us. The second program that we've started, it was actually a list that FEMA provided us to let us know who was still in the hotels. And that's where we started this time.
Okay, so both ways, from other agencies, word of mouth, and then kind of officially from FEMA.
Yes.
So what are the numbers like? How many people have you been helping in the past year?
The first program that we had started in October and ended in March with the Hurricane Maria survivors, and it was 200 households that was served under that program. This program is a little different because it started at the end of May, beginning of June. So it was everybody that was still left in the transitional the TSA program, the Temporary Shelter Assistance Program through FEMA. So through that program, we ended up with about 36 households.
Do you basically mean two different funding sources?
Yes.
But you've been helping people in sort of the same way, just get settled.
Yes.
And get going. So what's the process?
Well, we call them out. We bring them in for their intake process. And, you know, the main thing that we're really looking at is what is their source of income? Basically, what do we think that they could afford in their rent each month? And then hooking them up with a housing specialist that's going to try to find them something that would be considered affordable to them. Those that don't make enough to fall into that category where rent would be easy to find for them, we try to find ways to increase their income. I believe it was in July of this year, we actually had kind of a mini job fair where we had some employers come in and they spent the whole day and they saw our clients and everybody that was in need of a job was seen that day for an interview. And I believe they hired almost 98% of the people that walked in the door that day.
Wow. So you are first trying to find them a shelter, trying to find them a place to live.
Yes.
And if they can't afford something decent, you're trying to find them jobs.
I think we realized how comprehensive it was going to be when people started coming off the planes and telling us what they had been through and what they were in need of. But we had no preparation for the amount of people that were actually going to come through. And we're in Hillsborough, so most of the people actually came through Miami and Orlando, so we didn't even see nearly as many as they did, and it was still very, very overwhelming.
The numbers tell us one thing, but they don't really give us an idea of the personal stories. Is there one family or person that comes to mind that you can tell us about?
We've had, I can tell you one family that stuck with me was a daughter that came in. She lived here. She ended up quitting her job. She went to Puerto Rico. She brought her parents over here because they were elderly. They were stuck in their house with no power, no water, no food. And her father had actually been assaulted and they had been robbed from looters that had went into their house. So she basically brought her family over here, and then we tried to help them with a little bit of bill relief.
Were they staying with her?
Yes. She ended up taking them in and bringing them here and taking care of them.
Okay. You know, one thing I hear when I hear these stories is how complicated it is. Everybody has a different story, a different set of problems.
Yes.
You're trying to find people affordable places to live.
Yes.
As quickly as you can.
Yes.
Is it hard?
It's incredibly hard. Affordable housing is a crisis already all over the country. So it's something that we kind of deal with on our day-to-day basis already at Catholic Charities. But it's even harder now when you add a whole new group of people that are coming in that you're also trying to find housing for.
What about food? Food stamps or food assistance? Obviously, they're going to need everything.
Yeah, food stamps has actually been great. Most of our clients have come over and they have been approved very, very quickly for food stamps. Medicaid as well, those that have children, elderly, disabled, that's been very quick.
Well, that's good news.
That is.
So some things have been working very well.
Yes. Yes, they have.
Are people returning to Puerto Rico? Do they want to go home? What's the situation with
I would say the majority of our clients have returned to Puerto Rico. It just kind of depends on where they were. So those that were in the cities, I would say more of them have returned. The ones that are out in the countryside, out in those mountains, the repairs have not been as swift. Some of them still don't, from what we understand, we're hearing from clients, some of them still don't have running water. There may be some areas that have electricity, but not all the buildings have electricity to it. So I think it really kind of depends on where they were at and what the recovery looks like in that area.
So most of the families are tending to want to go back to
Puerto Rico. They want to. Even the ones that have relocated here that have decided that they can't go back. I mean, when we talk to them, they tell us that they think about Puerto Rico every day. And it breaks our heart to hear it. They do want to go home if they had the option. If you told them tomorrow that it was safe and sound and that their house was repaired, they would get on a plane in a heartbeat. I believe most of them would.
So you started out with over 200 families.
Yes.
And now you're down to just about 9 or 10?
Yep.
Very good.
Yes, ma'am.
People who have either gone back to Puerto Rico or
yes.
found more permanent situations
yes,
and aren't relying on you for help anymore.
Exactly. We've had a lot of clients be successful in finding their own jobs, establishing new residency, getting their kids enrolled in school. This is their new home.
That was Melissa Brass, a case manager for Catholic Charities of the Diocese of St. Petersburg. Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sessingham. We're taking a short break and we'll be right back. This is Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sessingham and we're hearing stories from the people whose lives were changed by Hurricane Maria. Last month, a team of student journalists from the University of Florida visited Puerto Rico to find out how the island's residents have been living almost a year after Hurricane Maria. One of the immediate impacts of the storm was a dramatic increase in the number of stray animals on the island. Claudia Perez Brito tells us it has become such a problem that the United States has had to step in and help.
Visiting Puerto Rico means that not only will you experience the Caribbean paradise the island offers, but you'll likely be a witness to dozens of roaming animals on the street alongside you. Specifically, in Vega Baja, on the northern part of the island, there's an open space near a beach. There, dogs tend to congregate, some in pairs, some alone, but all seemingly passing time. It's here where Ana Victoria Pardo makes one of her stops. When Pardo's gray Toyota pulls up, the dogs all lift their heads simultaneously, knowing their dinner has arrived. Every day. That's every day for the last 20 years that Pardo has dedicated to feeding stray dogs. She drives around with a trunk full of containers of water and bags of dog food. And although not everyone applauds her work, she says that if she doesn't do it, then who will?
After the storm, the situation worsened. In this area, there was about like, I would say like 25 to 30. Not anymore. Now just in that house, there are more than 20.
The house she's talking about is an abandoned house in the area. It's a two-story house that has no doors or windows. The light canary yellow paint on the walls is peeling off, but in the front, there's a mural of the Puerto Rican flag that remains unscathed and vibrant. It serves as a home for many of these dogs. Dogs, cats, and in some places, even horses and pigs are all a part of the stray animal population that's evident on the island. Following Hurricane Maria, many Puerto Ricans began leaving, which contributed to this large-scale problem. Claribel Pizarro, the executive assistant in charge of volunteer and educational programs at the Humane Society of Puerto Rico, witnessed this exodus.
You see someone that leaves tomorrow the island and bring their dog or their cat here today, you have to keep it. You have to take it because I am leaving tomorrow. Why? Why I have that responsibility? I don't have it. You have it because it's yours.
And even when the organization can't accept any more dogs because they've reached their capacity, some people still leave them tied to the front of the building, and when that happens, they're forced to take them in.
We have to educate more. People need to know that they are not things, that the animals are not things that you can throw away or give to a person, because they are lives, they are domestic animals, so they need their people.
As a response to the issue, Puerto Rico's governor, Ricardo Rosselló, signed an executive order that gave the U.S. Humane Society control of the animal welfare on the island. This led to the creation of the Spay-a-thon for Puerto Rico initiative. The goal? To sterilize 20,000 animals in low-income neighborhoods.
We expect to stabilize, to everything going normal again, and to bring dogs to the U.S., at non-kill shelters like us, to the U.S., and then that adoptions can be handled more and more.
The first round resulted in 5,600 animals being sterilized. The next three rounds will take place between November of this year and May 2019.
We don't want them to live here. We want them to have a home, to have their family.
A family that, for hundreds of animals, may never arrive as long as they remain on the island. Claudia Perez Brito in Gainesville.
Always a popular tourist destination, that aspect of Puerto Rico's economy was obviously hurt by the storm, but a slow return to normal has also affected recovery. Alexis Howard has more on how the government and local business owners disagree on how far Puerto Rico's tourism industry has come since Maria.
Business is back on its feet. Tourism is even higher than it was before the storm.
Puerto Rico's governor, Ricardo Rosselló, believes tourism is doing just fine. However, walking through the streets of Old San Juan, somewhat desolate, not a single soul in sight. We come across a humble green book shack, books and magazines filling every shelf. 1 year after Hurricane Maria tore through the island, tourism is still not at its best. Carlos Bonet Vargas, owner of that book shack, has a much different perspective nearly a year after Hurricane Maria struck the island.
Right now, I eat one time a day. I drink a coffee in the morning, and then late in the afternoon, I eat because I don't have the money.
Bonet Vargas says Hurricane Maria took everything from him. Then he was denied financial assistance from FEMA. He wasn't sure how he would survive or reopen his business.
I was without job or my work for about 3 months. because the federal government never sent me nothing.
Bonet Vargas claims the tourists who usually purchase his merchandise simply aren't coming, and he is not alone. About an hour east of Old San Juan in Fajardo, Luis Mendez, owner of Yokahu Kayaks, is experiencing the same struggles with his business.
We still hurt because it's about 40, maybe 50% less tourism than before we used to have.
Mendez says he used to take at least two large groups a night to tour the bioluminescent bay during peak tourist season. The tiny organisms that glow at night, turning the water to a sparkling blue, used to attract tourists from across the island. Now, he's not even sure when peak business season is.
It's been up and down, very unpredictable.
So who is right, the business owners or the governor? The answer may not be so black and white. Carla Campos is the director of the Puerto Rico Tourism Company. Her statistics paint a more nuanced scenario.
We are on track to being able to leverage an opportunity, but as I mentioned and cited some of those numbers, we're still in the process of recovering fully.
Campos says that just over three-fourths of Puerto Rico's hotel rooms have reopened, and that many people coming to stay in the hotels are still recovery workers not there for leisure. However, getting to the island presents another challenge.
Right after the hurricane, we were probably at 30% under previous year air capacity, and that's measured by seats. Right now, we are in the single digits, and moving into the fall and the winter, that air capacity, airlift capacity, is going to go back to pre-Maria levels.
Despite the fact that tourism may not be at its best, local business owners are hopeful that they will overcome this hurdle and that Puerto Rico will soon return to being a favorite Caribbean getaway for tourists.
People are coming here because for us, for the people, for the beach, for the food, for the music.
All the attributes that make Puerto Rico the island of enchantment.
Alexis Howard in Gainesville.
That's it for today's show. You can find photos and more on the stories we told today on our website, WUSFnews.org. And thanks to reporter Roberto Roldan. He tells us more about the people he spoke to for his stories on our podcast, Florida Matters More. Search for it wherever you get your podcasts. And we always like to hear from you. Do you have a connection to Hurricane Maria? Share your stories on our Facebook page or tweet us at Florida Matters. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. The producer is Mary Shedden. I'm Robin Sussingham. Thanks for listening.